Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere, this is Believe.
Fellow Falcoholics, what is up? Welcome to the Dirty Birds and Brews podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Knight, at Falcoholic Kevin, joined by a wonderful draft guest today. He is Trevor Sikkema at Tampa Bay Trey. He is over at PFF doing all things draft and also the co-host of the excellent Locked On, but it's the NFL Stock Exchange podcast.
I used to be on Locked On, but NFL Stock Exchange, you got it.
I've been listening because I've
done so many podcasts. I don't know how other people keep it together because I can barely keep it together. So
podcasts,
no.
But, yeah, sometime, day or night, whatever. But yes, he does cover the draft. That we do know for sure. Trevor, welcome back to the show. How you doing, my friend?
I'm doing great, Kevin. I appreciate you having me on. Excited to talk a little Falcons football with you.
Excellent, excellent. Well, busy offseason for Atlanta, guys. We got, obviously, Kirk Cousins to talk about. We have four picks in the top 79 to talk about and potentially more because there's maybe some buzz that Atlanta's one of the teams looking to trade down. So we'll talk about all that stuff. We'll get Trevor's thoughts on sort of how this team's looking heading into the summer. Before we do, real quick, want to bring you guys a word from our sponsor, betonline.ag. Folks, March Madness is here, and BetOnline is your bracket headquarters for this season with the best bracket contests out there and odds, lines, and info on every game and every round up until the national championship itself. You know, unless you're Bijan Robinson, you're probably, your bracket's in shambles. You know, we can't all be as good as Bijan, unfortunately, but no matter what you want to bet on, BetOnline has it, including the most up-to-the-minute wagering info anytime from your desktop or your mobile devices, and even tracking your bracket real-time all the way through the tournament. So what are you waiting for, folks? Head over to BetOnline today and get in on all the action. Just remember to use our promo code BELIEVE, that's B-L-E-A-V, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, the game starts here. All right, Trevor. Well, I feel like I have to start every show talking about Kirk Cousins because he's just going to dominate all the airwaves. I know he was the number one free agent according to a lot of lists and all that stuff. And the Falcons had a huge need at quarterback, and it was sort of an open topic all offseason. I know you guys talked about it a lot on NFL Stock Exchange. It's like, well, Falcons are at 8. Can they get up? Are they going to go for Justin Fields? Are they going to go for Kirk Cousins? What have you? And they ultimately do settle on Cousins. I know you and Connor were pretty complimentary of that and thought that was a good move, but now that you've seen it actually happen, how does that make you feel about this Falcons team?
This is best case scenario for them. It really is, because a lot of the rest of the roster is right there to compete, right? You move on from Arthur Smith because it's disappointing, right? It wasn't as good as it needed to be. They didn't figure out the quarterback position. Obviously they were in talks with Deshaun Watson and that didn't happen, and so they kind of like went a different route. They had Marcus Mariota in there, and then they were like, okay, we'll draft a guy in Desmond Ridder. But unfortunately, the draft that they wanted to go all in for a quarterback, there wasn't really a good quarterback class to go all in for. So I think they were very frustrated, and I said this as free agency was beginning. I said it a couple weeks leading up to free agency. I didn't think that Arthur Blank was going to be outbid for whatever quarterback he wanted in free agency, and I thought that they would have their sights set on Kirk Cousins. And to me, this is best case scenario for them, because sure, they have a top 10 pick. They have pick number 8, but I think top four quarterbacks off the board are all going to be off the board by 6. So knowing that it was you sitting at 8, the Giants sitting at 6, the Vikings at 11, the Broncos at 10, the Raiders at 13, all of these teams needed a quarterback and weren't in position to take one, or at least they'd be sweating it out, certainly with the Giants sitting there at number 6. So you knew you'd have to pay a good price to go up and get one. And instead, they get to keep all their draft picks, all their draft assets, and they go get a veteran who allows them to compete right away. So, look, all respect to everything that Tampa was able to do last year. I think that they impressed a lot of people. They certainly impressed me. I did not think that they were going to win the division. They're bringing a lot of those guys back, and I think that they're going to make a healthy run at it again. But now you insert Kirk Cousins into this Falcons depth chart, and this looks like the team to beat. You know, again, respect to the guys that are coming back for Tampa, and you got to beat the champs to be the champs when it comes to the division. But with Kirk Cousins there, I think that there's a lot of high expectations. And this was always the path that was going to yield the most immediate results for them. And I think that you are going to see that this year. I really do.
Yeah, it's very exciting. Obviously, a lot of energy around it. You know, the Falcons do have to pay a heavy salary cap cost, but the way they organize the contract into that four-year deal, they actually get Kirk Cousins two guaranteed years at relatively low cap hits for his production. I mean, I thought we were going to be looking at $45 million a year, and that's what it ultimately ends up being. But in year one, you know, it's under $30 million. Year two, it's more like 37.5. So it's not going to break the back of the team. And then they do have those two really expensive years for the final two if they want to stick with it. But they have some time now with a quarterback that in theory should be the best they've had since Matt Ryan. And, you know, we're going to find out really soon if quarterback was the issue, if Arthur Smith was the issue. Maybe it's both and there's a huge turnaround. Maybe it's a little column A, little column B. I'm sure no one was completely innocent in that travesty of Atlanta's offense last year. But they went all in on offense in free agency. They got Kirk Cousins. They also signed Darnell Mooney. They trade Desmond Ridder for Rondale Moore. They get Ray McLeod in here as, you know, I'm sure a depth guy. And obviously the return game, much more important now than it has been in years past. So right. When you think about what they've been able to do in free agency, sort of focusing all of their assets on offense and putting an array of weapons around Kirk Cousins.
Yeah, I think it makes sense because you spent a lot of money on the position that you knew you were going to have to spend the most money on, right, at quarterback. So you're okay doing that. And then when it comes to the draft assets, yeah, sitting at number eight, like they could have tried to wait it out for a Romo Dunze or a Malik Nabers or something like that. But instead, I think it does make the most sense for them to go, okay, we filled the biggest hole that we had in offense. The rest of the offense, to really make it quote-unquote complete, it's more of just these – you know, secondary free agency signings or secondary free agent moves. So we have the salary cap. We have the ability to go do that. And then for our draft, let's set up a situation where we can get as aggressive or not aggressive as we want. And I think that that's where they're at right now. They believe that their offense is now good enough. Starting with the offensive line, Bijan Robinson in the run game, obviously the pass catchers that they have accumulated now, and Kirk Cousins, they believe they'll be able to compete on the scoreboard. They believe that they will be top half of the league when it comes to scoring and scoring averages. They're hoping they get into that top 10. Top five is the goal, obviously, being the best that you possibly can be. But I think they believe they'll score enough points. And I think they also sort of realize that, yeah, they added some veterans that they like on the defensive side of the ball last year. But defense is going to be maybe that. Now it's going to be a year away no matter what. So I think that it was smart for them to go get the quarterback that you need. You've got maybe all 4 years of Cousins, but let's just say like it's a 3-year plan, right? Well, now you have this first year, you're getting everything acclimated. You're getting Zach Robbins acclimated with the offense as well. You're improving the defense. You're going all in with younger defensive players with premium draft picks in this upcoming draft. And then the following year, you have a mix of, okay, do we need a little bit more defense? Do we need a little bit more offense? Let's take our chance at really becoming that best version of that team and making a deep playoff run. So I think that's the timeline for this team right now. And especially with Raheem Morris, it's tough to go like sign a free agent defense that is going to be of your identity, right? It's a lot easier to draft it. And so with him being the head coach and him being a defensive minded head coach, it makes more sense for them to say, okay, we've got pick eight. Let's go get the type of defensive player that I want for this team, for what we want to build in the first round at that top 10 spot. It's just harder to set up that identity, if you will, when you do that through free agency. So to me, all of these moves make sense for Atlanta and what they are building. It makes them good for next year, for sure. They're going to take a shot at the division and a shot at a playoff spot and hosting a playoff game. But the real, I think, winning window for them, if you want to say it's open this year, okay, I can understand that because the roster is there. But the real opening of the winning window, I think, starts in 2025, 2026 for this team. And the way that you do that is by allocating the free agency funds on offense and then going through the draft, going through defense when it comes to the NFL draft.
Yeah, that certainly seems to be their plan, considering that they really haven't added to the defense much at all, aside from some re-signings and things like that. But the defense overachieved in a huge way last year. So, you know, I think they're hoping to, not that it'll be as good. I don't think it's going to be a fringe top 10 unit again, but you know, even if it's top 20, that's better than most of the defenses they've had over the past 10 years. And if the offense is good, you know, theoretically the offense can help your defense, and they haven't had a lot of that lately either. So we'll see how that all turns out. But, you know, on the topic of Raheem Morris, I know you have a little bit more of a connection to Raheem than most people do. from his time in Tampa. So I'm curious, you know, the coaching staff that is assembled, Raheem gets another shot with the Falcons. What do you think about the Falcons bringing him in along with Jimmy Lake and Zach Robinson?
Yeah, so look, I'm really happy for Raheem. I really am. When you go back to, I think there's, you know, there's some people that are quoting his head coach record when he was with Tampa, and they're using that as sort of reason to be a skeptic for him. You got to throw that out, man. Just like living around the Tampa area, I wasn't covering the team at the time. I was much younger. I was just getting out of high school at the time, so I was following them as a fan. But you know, as I got to work for Pewter Report and cover the team more closely, I got to work and talk with a lot of people who are in the industry, who were in the Tampa media workroom, who were covering the team when all of that stuff was going on. And you get to learn some things of how we got to that point. Well, the reality is John Gruden wanted to spend a lot of money every single offseason. He wanted the Glazers, who are the owners of the Buccaneers. He wanted the Glazers to spend, he wanted to be at the cap floor basically every single offseason. I want to max this out. I want to go get veterans. I don't want to play rookies. I want to play veterans on my team, and I want to be at the cap floor basically every year. The Glazers also own Manchester United, and so it's kind of this thing where they were like, okay, like we have a lot of money in Manchester United as well. We're not trying to be at the cap floor like every single season. You got to have a little bit of an ebb and flow, a rebuild, a winning window, all the kinds of stuff. And Gruden didn't want it. And he was demanding that you go sign these guys. And of course, I'm not in the room, so this is kind of just what I have heard.
Right.
But it eventually got to the point where the team wasn't playing as well as they needed to. It felt like there was a rift, and Gruden's out. They fire John Gruden. They fire the general manager, and they turn everything over. And the Glazers were basically like, we've spent so much money on this Super Bowl window that they had from like 2022 or sorry, from like the late 1990s to when Gruden was fired. And they're like, okay, we're going to take a step back a little bit here. We're going to tear this roster down. We're going to get a little bit younger. Mark Dominic is the general manager, cause he signs up for it. He's like, yeah, absolutely. If you make me the GM, like I'll make it work. And they elevated Raheem Morris to that spot because I don't know how much this was talked about, but from what it feels like I have heard about the situation, what head coach was going to want to come in and basically right. be like, yeah, we're not going to spend money here for the next 2 years. Like, you're just going to have to win with what we have and the young guys that we draft. And Raheem, who was, God, what was he? 30
at like
the time?
30 or 31. Yeah, it was nuts.
He was like 30. Yeah. He was like 31 years old, 30 or 31 years old. He's the defensive backs coach. And they just elevate him to head coach because, of course, when they come to you and present this opportunity to, hey, do you want to be a head coach at age 30? What are you going to say? No, you're not going to say no. You're not going to be like, ah, you know, I want to be a coordinator first. There's millions of dollars.
Yeah.
So he takes the job. They overachieve in year one. And again, from what I was kind of told, he goes to ownership, goes to the general manager, and it's like, we will not do that again. I think they won 10 games in
yeah,
this first
Josh
year.
Freeman, head coach. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And he basically was like, we will not do that again with this team. We played as best as we possibly could. We got lucky. And it was like that scene in Moneyball where Brandon Bean goes to the owner and he's like, and the owner was just like, ah, you know, we'll figure out what we can do. And I'm sure that you'll do the best with those guys. And he's like, we cannot compete. And ownership and the general manager and everything, they just weren't going to put money into it. And so Raheem then had two disappointing seasons, which he basically told them was going to happen. So he gets fired, and then, you know, that head coaching record I felt like carried with him for a long time in his NFL career. I don't think that was as deserved as it felt like it was the black cloud that was over his head, the rain cloud that was over his head when it came to getting elevated to a defensive coordinator, an assistant head coach, or even potentially head coach jobs over the last couple of years. So I'm very happy that here over a decade later, he is getting another shot as a head coach, because I think he's a good coach. And I think that this is it's a really cool spot in Atlanta for him. So I'm excited for him.
Yeah, no, that's terrific insight into it. And, you know, I appreciate you sharing all that, because I think it is a common refrain, you know, look at the record, look at all this. And like, I understand, like, if you weren't watching the games at that era or really following it, you probably would have no idea what was going on. And how much are you going to cite other than the record? Because it's been, what, 15 years, 17 years, something crazy like that. So I appreciate the insider insight from a Tampa Bay native to give us some information. I've always liked Raheem from when he was here as the interim guy with Kyle Shanahan and all that. And I think he was deserving of an opportunity, you know, after the failures in 2020, but the Falcons just couldn't hire him after that year. You know, they had to turn the page on the whole Dan Quinn era and everybody involved. Mm-hmm. So
right.
I'm glad he got another opportunity to come back to Atlanta, because I think he absolutely deserved it. And we're going to see. I I think his relationships and his ability to connect with both staff and players is going to be really interesting. And, you know, we'll see if he's more of that CEO type coach that we just don't see that often anymore. You know, he says he's going to let Jimmy Lake call the defense and, you know, Zach Robinson call the offense. I'm interested to see how it turns out. Definitely seems like they're going more to that 3-4 style defense, like they were a few years ago with Dean Pease. So we'll see how that turns out. But, you know, the decision at 8 has a lot to do with that, right? Because now that they've addressed the offense in free agency, they still have a lot of needs on defense, and that kind of starts and ends with the edge pass rush, which was abysmal once again last year. They did manage to cobble together like over 40 sacks with just a lot of guys having a few, which was impressive, but you know, they didn't really do anything to help that, and Calais Campbell to this point has still not returned. So what do you think about the direction they go at 8? I know in your latest mock you had them going Dallas Turner. They were reportedly very interested in Jared Verse last year, but you know, Ryan Nelson's more 4-3 defense. Maybe he was a better fit for that. And then Laiatu Latu ends up testing out way better than I think people thought. And it seems like he's getting the medical thumbs up. So, I mean, he could be in play there potentially too. What's your thought on sort of the direction they could go at 8?
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the three edge rushers. I lean Dallas Turner just because I wonder if they'll just absolutely love the athleticism that he has, and he can be more of that stand-up 3-4 outside linebacker for you. If you do want to base everything that you're doing more around a 3-4 style, I think that either him or Latu just naturally fits that more. I think that Verse is more of a 4-3 defensive end, like you said. Would have loved him on this team last year, but you're right. If you're switching it up, not that I think that he'd be bad in a 4-3 by or 3-4 by any means, but it's just not as natural for him. I think you're maximizing the talent of Turner or Latu. Latu's, to me, the best edge rusher in this class. His production, you just can't deny it. I went back and forth with the traits versus production with him and the power of Verse. It's just, I've gone back and forth so many times, but Latu's going to be my guy. He's going to be edge one. He's going to be who I have finalized as edge one. Just you cannot deny how good he is at getting into the backfield. So I think that he'd be great for this team. I also think that where edge pass rush is definitely a big need for them, and I think they're going to take a swing at the bat at edge pass rusher in the first round, corner is also a need for this team, right? Like, not only do they have a need opposite AJ Terrell, AJ Terrell is entering the final year of his contract, right? So you assume that you're going to want to keep your good players and that he's not going to go anywhere, but you never know what happens, right? I mean, like, look what happened with the Carolina Panthers. Like, the Panthers, at no point, I believe that Brian Burns was not going to be a Panther long-term, right? They reportedly turned down a haul that included 2 first-round picks for him. So you think at that point, if you're not trading an edge rusher for 2 first-round picks, now, again, that was a report, who knows? But, like, if that was true, you're hoping that this guy plays 10 more years for you, right? That he's going to be on your team for the next decade. And now here he is, but year later, Giants. He's on the New York Giants. And it's like, things happen so quickly. Look at what happened with the Jags and Calvin Ridley, right? Ridley was, it felt like, always just going to go back to Jacksonville. They were just, you know, trying to do it the right way, I think, to be tricky with the trade compensation with Calvin Ridley and the Falcons, obviously, like, trying to give, like, as little as possible back. And now, all of a sudden, Ridley is not on the Jags. Now, all of a sudden, he's on the Titans. And it's like, you can say to yourself, oh, AJ Terrell's not going anywhere. You never know that. Right. 1 year in the NFL is just an eternity, and the possibilities are endless of what could change. So I go on that rant to say, corner at 8 should not be off the board. If Quinyon Mitchell is there from Toledo, he's an excellent pick for them. I love Cooper DeJean as well. Like, I think Cooper DeJean would be worth a pick that's high. You know, him on one side, AJ Terrell on the other. I think that's especially with Jesse Bates on the back end. Like, that is a nasty trio of defensive backs there that you then have on that team to have an incredibly talented secondary. So pass rush is important. I don't want people listening to this podcast to think that I'm brushing that aside. If you love one of these two edge rushers, you're probably going to take one of them. But corner is another spot that I think you've got to take a good, honest look at. And if Quinyon Mitchell is your favorite player in this draft defensively, you could take him at 8 and it'd be worth it for the Falcons.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's definitely one to consider that has picked up a little steam lately, particularly with the team not like bringing back Jeff Okuda and stuff like that. So we'll definitely see. I'm curious what you think about the potential of a trade down, because like you said, there's a number of prospects they could be interested in. You know, Dallas Turner, Laiatu Latu, Quinyon Mitchell, maybe Cooper DeJean in the mix as well. You know, what do you think about the potential of them? Say, you know, one of the receivers lasts or Joe Alt falls or something. You know, you never know in the draft.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the Falcons could be interested in that player too, but if they're not, someone might be calling to trade up, or, you know, who knows how crazy Sean Payton's going to get to get, you know, Michael Penix or whoever it is that he wants at quarterback. Is he going to sit at 12? Is he going to try to trade back himself? You know, who knows what could happen there? But what do you think about the possibility of the Falcons entertaining a trade down for Mate to grab one of those guys they like a few picks later?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I've never really thought about the Falcons as a big trade down candidate just because they do need a pass rusher or a lockdown corner so bad, and you could stand at eight and you could probably take the best one in this draft, whoever you believe that to be. But, you know, I look at a team like Indianapolis at 15, right? Indianapolis needs another wide receiver, I would say, that gives them an athletic boost on that team. They could also use a Brock Bowers. I think that they would love Brock Bowers as well. So is Indy sitting there at 15 go, well, let's call up the Falcons, see what it'll take to get back. Falcons don't have to draft. They don't have to drop too far in the first round, but you're whatever, picking up a couple of draft picks. Well, I don't know what the trade compensation would exactly be, but that's a team that I look at where Malik Nabers shouldn't fall. But yeah, like, let's say like Malik Nabers falls. I mean, like, he is their perfect player. You know, like, if I think that Indianapolis would want to be on the phone immediately. If the Giants take Romo Dunze, because they like him and his size more than Nabers, or, and if the Titans end up taking Joe Alt at 7,
right?
Let's say, well, I guess Nabers, well, no, because you could have three quarterbacks go off the board. You could have Marvin Harrison Jr. go off the board at 4. You could have the Vikings, I'm just throwing out the Vikings, yeah, trading up to 5 for the Chargers. Then you have JJ McCarthy going at 5, another quarterback, whoever that quarterback is going at 5. Giants take Odunze, Titans take Joe Alt, and then you're sitting there at 8, and Malik Nabers or whoever could be on the board. Falcons fans might be listening to this and be like, why don't we take Nabers? You know, like,
well, yeah, I mean,
but I think if you're looking for a trade down, it would probably only be worth it if one of the wide receivers was still available. Yeah. Maybe Joe Alt as well, but there's a lot of good offensive tackles in this class. Yeah, so
it's deeper.
I don't know if the price would be demanding enough to move back from 8 at that point, if it's not like somebody moving up for a guy that they think is going to be an incredible wide receiver one for them, and then Odunze or Nabers.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. I think it's something that it'll just have to come down to draft night and who's on the board and who's interested in calling, because it's hard to predict those things ahead of time. I don't think it's going to be one of those advanced trade situations or anything like that, but we know that Fontenot's open to trading both ways. He's usually done it more in the second round, interestingly, but they're open for business, so we'll see what happens. You know, I wouldn't be opposed to Malik Nabers in Atlanta either. It definitely seems like that would be more of a luxury to get that, as opposed to the edge rusher or the corner that you really desperately need. But sometimes you just, you know, you just have to keep the streak going and 4 straight skill players in the first round just to really needle the fans. But Malik Nabers is like, I think you could make the argument that he's definitely like, you know, a top 5, top 6 player in this class. So I wouldn't be upset about it, just because, look, you know, we're just going to go all in on offense, whatever. But I know in the second round you actually did have them trading up in your mock to get Nate Wiggins. So, you know, if they don't get corner in the first round, they could absolutely address it in the second round. I know there's folks that think safety could be on the board, like if Tyler Newbin's still around or something like that, for someone next to Jesse Bates. But curious what you think their day 2 priorities might end up being in this draft.
Yeah, I think it's probably a lot of just what doesn't get addressed in round 1, right? I think that their big needs, you kind of mentioned them there, edge rusher, corner, and then maybe safety, you know, that could play next to Bates and whoever, whatever positions you don't address in the first round, you're really looking to, again, attack and be aggressive, getting better in the second round. That's why, like, if a guy like Wiggins or Kool-Aid McKinstry or one of those top corners ends up falling at the beginning of the second round, like, I'm sitting there if I'm Atlanta and I'm trying to trade up. Like, yeah, I'm trying to give up some, let's go get cornerstone difference maker potential types of guys, because this class is good enough to where night 1 will end and we will all be like, oh, this guy's still on the board. Oh, this guy's still on the board. This guy's still on the board. And I think that you're going to see that from a variety of different positions. And Atlanta has the opportunity to be one of those teams that could trade up and really hit two of those needs, I think, in a really big way. And so I had them doing that in the mock.
Yeah, yeah. I know Spencer Rattler comes in as well. You know, it definitely seems like with the choice to sign Kirk Cousins, they've kind of solved quarterback for a few years. But if they want to draft a developmental guy, this would be the year to do it, or next year probably, to try to get someone in here and get him potentially ready to play when Kirk Cousins hangs him up. They do decide to keep Taylor Heinicke. There was some buzz that he might be taking a pay cut, based on what Over the Cap has put up on their site. So we'll see if that's a restructure or void years or whatever's going on with that. But they have Heinicke, but I agree. Someone like Spencer Rattler, who I think he's one of those guys, kind of like Kirk Cousins, that people sort of made up their minds about a few years ago and now has actually put out pretty good tape and is an actually interesting day two quarterback. I think he's got potential, so I like that move too. But wide receiver is one that I know in the first round it seems a little rich given what they've invested there. But on day two, this is a super deep class. Do you have any receivers that you would be keeping an eye on for Atlanta in that day two range?
There's plenty, right? I mean, there's all sorts of shapes and sizes of guys that you could go get. Roman Wilson, Ricky Pearsall, Jermaine Burton. I think those are three guys that that I love, is those like smaller types of receivers who really good route runners, guys that can win vertically, guys that could honestly win in a variety of different ways. But then, you know, you got stronger guys like Xavier Leggett from South Carolina, Jalen Polk from Washington, depending on if Keon Coleman ends up being there in the second round. Like, he's another big bodied dude. So I like all of those guys, honestly, as like those second round picks. But then I think there's players even a little bit further down that I love. Javon Baker from UCF, I think, is a very underrated wide receiver in this class. If you put Javon Baker in most other receiver classes, I think he's probably a top eight receiver. And just because this receiver class is so good, he's sitting there at like, you know, wide receiver 13 or 14. Right. And it's just, that doesn't mean that he's any less talented. There's just a lot of really good players in this class. You want to go a little bit further, you know, mid-round players, Anaya Smith from Texas A&M, you know, maybe a Malik Washington, who's had a really great calendar year, both this past year at Virginia, extremely productive, and then also at the Shrine Bowl at the Combine. He's showed himself very, very well, and I think that he is a good player too. You want to go a little bit further into day three, maybe a Luke McCaffrey, who was somebody who I thought played really well at the Senior Bowl. Yeah, skinnier dude, smaller dude, but just a really good football player. Obviously, you know the name McCaffrey. His dad, Ed McCaffrey, played in the NFL for a long time. His brother, Christian McCaffrey, doing great things for the San Francisco 49ers. And so you got the family bloodlines there. So, I think that this is a really good group of wide receiver prospects that you can get basically anywhere.
Yeah, I agree. I think you would be doing a disservice to not still grab one, even though you signed two and traded for one. I think they still need more. I think a long-term wide receiver too to pair with Drake London, that's going to be on like a relatively affordable rookie class. I think that's something they would probably like to add on day two, and we'll see what they can find. But yeah, I love the Malik Washington shout out, because he's, I feel like no one's like weirdly talking about him, like even though he just, I think he's PFF's number one wide receiver, like from the last years in college football
production. He was nuts, and when he went to, he's just a little bit smaller of a guy, and like he's explosive, but like sometimes his moments are a little bit stiff. I don't know. Like, so I say that because I could picture routes in my head where things were more rounded than they were sudden. But there are other times where I watch him like sink the hip and chop the feet. So he's a really good football player, man. Yeah. I am fascinated to see where the NFL drafts him because of how productive that he has been. And it just doesn't seem like he's being talked about enough.
No. Like, I think he could go anywhere from like day two to like mid day three. It just seems like people, opinions on him are all over the place. So we'll see if he's there on day three. I'm sprinting the card in. But curious, speaking of day three, do you have any like just player fits that you like for Atlanta? It could be any position, just guys that you sort of see fitting into this Atlanta offense or defense that could be run a little bit later in the draft.
Ooh, good question. So for edge rushers, I wonder how high Xavier Thomas from Clemson is going to go. You watch his tape, and this is a day two player to me, like easy. I think that he is extremely explosive, former five-star. Him and Trevor Lawrence were basically the crown jewels of the 2018 class with Clemson, but he stayed a little bit longer. He wanted to stay an extra year to help out his draft stock. Then he hurt his foot, so now he comes back another year after that. So he's been in college a long, long time. But I think that he is a really talented pass rusher that makes sense. Maybe another day three guy. I'm looking at like a Malik Mustafa, the safety from Wake Forest, where you could have Jesse Bates play as a more of that free safety type and allow Mustafa to just be a downhill type of big time tackler, big time impact player, brings that physicality. So that's somebody as I'm kind of, I'm just scrolling the PFF big board here. And I think that like, those are two players that really stood out to me as like guys for whatever reason could really fit into what Atlanta's trying to add.
Yeah, no, I like that. Some good call outs there. Trevor, really appreciate your time today, breaking it all down, guys. He's Trevor Sikkema at Tampa Bay Trey, doing the draft stuff for PFF, co-hosting on the NFL Stock Exchange podcast. Nailed it that time. Trevor, anything else you want to let the people know about before we sign off today?
No, that's it, man. It was great joining you again. Great talking some Atlanta Falcons football. I'm very excited to see how it all plays out at the end of April.
Yeah, me too. It's people, I think the Bucs have earned the respect that they did not get last year. I think I was super low on them. I think a lot of people were. And they put it together, and Baker Mayfield, to his credit, you know, really assembled a good season. And, you know, so it's not going to be a cakewalk. I think, you know, I'm definitely celebrating the downfall of the Saints very, very much. But, you know, I don't know how competitive they're going to be. We have to see how their draft shakes out. But that Ryan Ramczyk news was pretty devastating because it's going to be like they were already having. I think they let Andres Pete go, and then. If Ramczyk can't play, that's brutal.
Yeah.
He's so good. So
yeah, he is. He is.
It is a deep tackle class, but I think they were hoping to use that pick on an edge. So it's just like, ugh. It's getting sketchy there. And we'll see if the Panthers can do anything. But it's going to be a fun NFC South this year. I think it should be a better NFC South as a whole. Hopefully we'll get some teams with winning records.
Whether it's teams with double digit wins or nobody with double digit wins, the NFC South is always an absolute dogfight. So it's entertaining no matter what.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be good stuff. But thanks again, Trevor, for coming on, guys. I'm Kevin Knight at Falcoholic. Kevin, thank you for watching today's episode on Dirty Birds and Brews. Please like, subscribe. If you're watching on YouTube, leave us that 5-star review in your podcast platform of choice. We will be doing our first live mock draft for the channel members and the patrons on Monday. It'll be Monday, I think, around 6:15. So look for the announcement there on Patreon and on the channel member page here on YouTube. Join up if you haven't yet. You can join up all the way till go time at 6:15. And, of course, the show will be available in a recorded version afterwards as well. But if you want to weigh in on the picks, you got to be there. So, you know, I can't hear your opinion if you're not there. So I know a lot of people have some strong takes about the top of this class. So we're going to get into that. But thanks again for tuning in, guys. We will see you next time on the Dirty Birds and Brews podcast. Have a great day, folks.